What does motion sound like? With Kizik Hands Free Shoes, it sounds a little something like this. Experience the magic of motion. Get a free pair of socks with your first order at kizik.com/socks.
Da, 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 da.
You sound insane. You realize that?
Yeah.
The whole world got crazy.
Are you serious?
Ladies and gentlemen.
Yeah. It's showtime.
Hey, what's going on, everyone out there, listener base, Nam Fam, so to speak. It's Richard here. As you can tell, I'm not normally the first voice you hear when we start this show. Kent and Brian are out this week. They're on a couples retreat to Thailand with their significant others. I didn't mean to imply anything there, but they're out this week. As you can imagine, Kent's very busy with Cowboys related work. And Brian's Chewbacca shelf, he found out he was measuring it, and it was 1 degree off. And, you know, he's a completist. So, obviously couldn't record this week because of that. But we have something even better for you. We have David Sunday in the house. David, say hello.
Richard, great to be here with you.
It is the pleasure is all mine, and hopefully will be all the listeners. So, I'm biased because I love David to death, and David is in fact my flesh and blood. He's my cousin. We are related, and our bond goes beyond that. We are simpatico like you wouldn't believe, and we're gonna have a great show for you here. And there's no one I trust more than David on this. And it only took 6 years for me to get you on, so I came true to my word.
Well, I mean, you know, Richard, it's just such a pleasure to meet you here for the first time.
And it is.
Heard so much. Avid listener of the pod. Mm-hmm. You know, I feel like I've gotten to know you via your movie kind of commentary here.
Yeah.
So just, I mean, you know, when you say that we're brothers, you know, we are in that.
Yeah.
I've listened to every one of your pods and written you 700 fan mail letters.
I know. I'm embarrassed when you confuse me.
Still awaiting a response.
No, and I will. I'm confused. I'm worried you're confusing me with Tim Ferriss, but same thing, really. Equally yoked.
Right.
So I'm just gonna put a word of warning out here. David and I are like I said, we're family. We have the same sense of humor, same sensibility on things. We're gonna talk about Dick Cheney and the movie Vice. You know, if you're not a Richard fan, if you are a Kent and Brian stan all the way, probably not the episode for you. If you do enjoy my sensibility, get ready for it doubled, because we're going to go back and forth on quite a few things. But David, welcome to the show, and let's get into Vice and all things surrounding. But first, before we get into the movie, I wanted to ask you a little bit. So you and I are both history nerds and political nerds, big time, right? We have.
Yeah. Sorry, Richard. I was topping off my Grenache just in advance of the episode.
Yeah. So. David is live from Santa Monica. Are you at your commune right now? Or are you right on the pier, or what's your situation? Are you with Tall?
Well, you know, was with Paul catching Pokemon on the pier, but settled in here with a nice Grenache. You know, right here in Santa Monica, I got a bowl of whole grain oatmeal. So I'm really. I feel wealthy in spirit. So
you're ready
let's dig in here.
Let's dig in. And if you could turn down the NPR in the background, I'd appreciate it. It's distracting. But we have a lot to talk about. So Dave and I are history nerds and political nerds, and we have this thing we call the Richard and David reading list. And we send books back and forth to each other. It's like a 2-person book club, and we go really dark into abscesses of American history and politics and economics and business and all things in between. We have really similar taste on it. And one of the books we read this year, and then we both reread it for this movie, is Angler. And Angler is a history of the Cheney vice presidency. So it's a little bit different from this movie in that this movie really focuses on the rise of Dick Cheney as well as his, you know, prominence as the vice president. Whereas the book Angler, which I think you would also recommend, is just a focus, a micro focus on his vice presidency. So Dick Cheney is a really fascinating fascinating character. And hey, just go ahead and hold all your emails for us, whether you think we're not hard enough on Dick Cheney or you think we're too hard on Dick Cheney, or you're saying save politics. it's a political movie with political content. So we're going to get political here. We're going to discuss it. We are respectful of both sides, but it's impossible to talk about someone like Dick Cheney without discussing their politics and what those mean, both in their moment and historically. So Cheney's a really captivating person, and Dave and I have been kind of texting back and forth about it for the last few days about what makes him so interesting, what makes him such a unique character, and even more so than, say, George W. Bush, the president in which he served under. What makes Cheney to you, David, more interesting than even a lot of presidents?
You know, when I think of Cheney, and the movie did, I think, really, you know, give this a good swing and tried to work this in. But Cheney is the consummate operator. He's a details guy. And I think more than anything, he's a system guy. He understands the dark bowels of the U.S. government maybe better than anybody. I mean, you kind of think in that on that bench of similar players might be a Mitch McConnell in the Senate, you know, in a kind of very well known for understanding just the procedural minutiae at a level that's, you know, unprecedented. And I think in the same way, and maybe, you know, in an even broader kind of, you know, example set of experience, he just understands how to manipulate the bureaucracy to get what he wants done. And so, you know, left, right, wherever you are, hard to argue with that as a, you know, I'd say fairly well documented profile of him at this point.
Definitely. And the movie does an excellent job of that. Now, the movie does have flaws in it as well, which we'll get to in a bit. But just on that operator piece, the great tragic irony of Cheney is, as a systems person, as someone who's in charge of foreign policy, as someone who's in charge of energy and Middle East relations within the Bush administration, he kind of, you know, yeah. Whiffs is a hard thing because it's not the most obvious thing in the world, but his big gaping flaw is they miss any warnings on 9/11. And so that's someone, like, if you were going to have anyone catch that, you would probably have picked Dick Cheney, either out of paranoia or, as you said, a master of bureaucracy or systems, a master of intelligence in a way. So the grand irony is, and I'm not putting it at his feet in any way, I'm just saying that it is something that occurred. So, the movie doesn't really touch on that as much in terms of this is someone who has mastered the system, and the movie sort of paints it as someone who is Shakespearean in their quest for pure power, power as a means to an end, power over everything, power over any real set of beliefs. But I think you and I agree on, we couldn't disagree with that. I think Cheney has had a real set of beliefs that I think the movie's kind of wimps out on that and doesn't really touch on that because it doesn't want to offend. But he's a true believer in a lot of ways of modern conservatism in terms of supply side economics and, you know, the will of the West over the Middle East and so forth. So, you know, the movie fails a little bit on that. But what do you think on that in terms of outside of the movie, you know, Cheney as a figure?
Well, you know, Rich, I think and you know, I've said this too many times, it's to understand and appreciate Dick Cheney, you have to be willing to do what he would do, which is, you know, put on the waders, get in the stream and dig into the details, if you don't mind me kind of, you know, using that, I'd yeah. say, extremely overplayed, you know, metaphor of him yeah. loving no. fishing.
Did you know he's a fly fisherman, David? I don't know if you were aware. He's a fly fisherman. He's from Wyoming. Well,
he's from Wyoming, right? Which I think, you know, let's just start there. But, you know, all kidding aside, I think he's not it's easy to character. I think it's easy and it's lazy to characterize Dick Cheney as this kind of, and perhaps even a younger version of myself did this, as this kind of shadowy, dark, evil figure. And you know, you can argue whether or not what he did was. We can have a whole separate conversation about what the outcome of what he did was, but and how bad it is. But when you look at the guy himself, you can't be lazy in your characterization of him. This is a complicated guy who he doesn't do things for no reason, and his motivations are way more complicated than just money and riches and power. It's not that simple. And I think the temptation in almost any media or other coverage of him that I've seen, and this movie to some extent is included, is just to kind of paint him as this you know, this monster, I guess, this kind of simplistic monster that's very motivated in one direction for one thing.
And which he leans into, by the way, with the, like, he kind of leaned into the Darth Vader thing just because, you know, that simplifies thing, right? Yeah, you would
hilarious.
Too, right?
Like,
yeah.
If someone was like, this guy's Darth Vader, I'd be like, yeah, I mean, why not? You know, may as well. You're not going to come back from it, so you may as well just embrace it.
Right.
Yeah. But, and again, I don't want to say that in any sense, I think you'll hear us probably talk a lot about on this podcast, you know, the Chaney as a character and his motivations, and then the outputs of what Chaney did. And I don't think you'd ever hear me, you know, here in Santa Monica say that I would agree with anything that Chaney did. Or, you know, and even more so, I don't think a lot of what he did was ethical.
Sure.
But I think the point you're asking me is, like, you know, does I think one issue I have is Chaney's a complicated person, and he does a lot of, kind of, in my view, unethical, crazy things, but he doesn't do them for these simple kind of, you know, id reasons of just money and power. This is a complicated true believer who, and you kind of hit on this earlier, you know, the ultimate irony of Chaney is, for a guy who knows the U.S. government so well, you know, holy smokes, how did he mess up understanding any other complex system in the world?
Sure.
And I think that's really the story I think about when I think of Chaney.
Right. And we're going to get into how the movie relates to that. But we wanted to kind of paint this picture at the beginning as well for context, because the other Chaney piece in terms of, you know, I think the simple thing is, like, it was, we talk about, like, kind of the deadhead 1960s liberal posture is, like, man, he just went over there to, like, make money for Halliburton, man. And that's just not the case. And he's a really interesting figure. And the movie kind of lets you down on this, but he goes from someone who's, I mean, you know, it touches on this personally, someone who's in the drunk tank to who's the youngest chief of staff in history. What an intellect that takes. I mean, whether you agree with the ethics, but what an intellect that takes. But then also, someone who really changed from a fiscal responsibility conservative, what we recognize as a conservative pre-Reagan, to someone who's a supply side person who believes in trickle down and all of those things. And yeah, kind of flips.
No doubt in my mind, the Chaney of 1970 is at least somewhat horrified with the Chaney of 2015.
Right. And I think I think his narrative on that is 9/11 changed me. And I'm, no, you know, we didn't go through that on that level. I mean, we lived through 9/11, but I mean, we didn't go through it on the level of a leader of the free world, one of the leaders of the free world. There we go. I got the plural in the right place there.
That was a very Chaney mistake. You make
I know. I'll just hang up and let you take over from here.
Am I the free leader of the world? Or am I not?
Right. And we're going to talk about that in a second. That's my next question for you, is the Addington Joe piece. But
I mention, Richard, that you know, Christian Bale, you know, I don't know if I, you know, I'm in Los Angeles. Possible that he's within 100 yards of this podcast. I'm not saying it's true.
He is a Santa Monica guy, right? So he could be, he's zip code of you right now. So he could hear, you might be Christian Bale in character. We don't know.
It's all possible. And I think we all know how accurate celebrity net worth is. According to, I'm not saying this, celebrity net worth is saying,
which
that,
is, yeah, you can't argue with it. The only thing more accurate is Wikipedia. Yeah.
Only thing. And yeah. I'm basically, I confess, it's actually me, Christian Bale, in character. So.
Yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah.
All
right.
Go ahead.
No, that was great.
I wanted to touch on that, on one other thing, because the interesting thing with Chaney is in the power of the vice presidency and the what this movie dances around but doesn't get into the nitty gritty on, and I understand why, it's a narrative film, is the way he went about getting his power, meaning he had these sort of team of constitutional attorneys, you know, Addington and it's Cho, right? I always think I have that wrong, but I might just be self conscious. Or is it
Pardon me.
Gosh. Okay.
Yeah, John
pardon
you.
John
Berkeley
Yu.
Guy.
Yeah. I always get the Berkeley part right. I get the, pardon me. These brilliant, technically brilliant attorneys who just sort of skirt the law in some ways. And this isn't a conservative or liberal point. I'm saying they, you know, use the, they sort of frame the executive in a certain way and used constitutional legal language to give Cheney and also Bush vis-a-vis through Cheney a certain power just because they wrote it. I think that's really interesting, right? That wasn't passed by anything. You have some thoughts on that, so I want to let you can speak to it better than I can.
I think it comes down to a couple things, and you know, again, just thinking about it tactically, Cheney recognized that this kind of very, you know, obscure office called the Office OLC, Office of Legal Counsel, in, you know, some random interpretation of one paper, you know, allegedly has the ability to kind of unilaterally set how the executive branch interprets the law. And so classic Cheney understands that that exists, hires, you know, Addington, who we can go into later about his kind of profile, but leverages the OLC to basically just decide how the Constitution should be interpreted. And I am definitely not a scholar of constitutional law, and, you know, not someone who spends a lot of time thinking about what,
but
you know, the document
you
can
do
use,
carry
but
your,
I think,
you do carry your Cato Institute Constitution with you at all times.
Well, I,
in your breast pocket.
I mean, I'm American, so like, I know you don't. Here's my issue with it, and I'll be bold enough to say I have an issue with it, is, you know, and you see this time and time again in any sort of scheme to exert unilateral power for something that people know, you know, probably wouldn't pass the popularity sniff test if you put it to a vote, is, you know, I fail to understand how two guys sitting in a room writing 80-page legal memos that, by the way, aren't even peer-reviewed, to just interpret the law kind of at their own will. I don't understand how anyone can step back and be like, yeah, I reasonably think this is how the Constitution should
right.
be interpreted.
Right.
Now, I guess if you're a cynic, you say, well, obviously, it's just, you know, CYA, right? He wants to make mm-hmm. sure that when he's prosecuted 10 years later for whatever it is, oh, well, you know, the president's counsel via the OLC, you know, wrote this legal opinion. I just, it almost just defies logic to me.
Sure.
It's like, you're a smart guy, and you just, you find it acceptable to take unbelievable liberties to, you know, spend the country's resources to send people to war, to make decisions about how those people behave abroad, to, you know, decide the country's conduct based on a 36-year-old lawyer from Berkeley sitting in a room in the basement of the White House writing a 95-page essay that
right.
no one else ever sees.
I have a Google Doc I need to show you later, by the way.
Well, I'd love to see it. But I guess it, and, you know, I guess call me naive for thinking that
sure.
politicians don't, you know, think that that's enough, but I just, it, you know, I think it really speaks more to kind of Cheney's mindset of getting things done is above all other priorities. And even if that requires, you know, these kind of, these tactics that almost acknowledge how ridiculous the objectives are, if that makes
and,
sense.
No, totally. And the crucial question with Cheney is, and it's not answerable, is, was that done out of a real fear and patriotism in the midst of a war? Or is that done in a cynical way to take advantage of that war? And it's, you know, you can have your opinions on either side, and one might be more likely than the other, but neither are provable, right?
Right. The outcomes are always the same, and I'm sure we'll say this 15 more times tonight. Mm-hmm. The outcomes are the same. We can debate the outcomes. The more, and whether or not they're good or bad, obviously I have my opinion, but the more interesting question is, did Cheney arrive there out of true belief, or did he arrive there out of true cynicism? And, you know, the even more interesting question is, which one is scarier, you know?
Sure.
And I mean, in my opinion.
No, and now to get into the movie, the movie dances around that. And the weakest parts of the movie, which is a movie that has some great performances, is certainly an interesting subject matter, is certainly a fine screenplay and an interesting, a lot of great scenes. But it's a movie that really skates around that, right? Go ahead.
I think you're going to love this. I mean, I actually haven't told you about this yet.
I'm excited.
Even though, you know, we've texted 900 times today. So recently read a, I actually don't know if this is like an official review or just like a fan review, but it was published in the Boston Globe, and I thought it really struck a chord with me.
Okay.
That characterizing this movie as a dramatic reenactment of the body of Dick Cheney's Wikipedia page.
Yes.
Spliced yes, with the appropriate funny gifs at the right times, which I just thought, I mean, I can't, I'm not even going to try to say it better because I think that's just so accurate. But yeah, I think the movie, frankly, I enjoyed watching it. But I think it danced around the complexities of who Cheney is, and it took a lot of shortcuts that I think would have, you know, if they'd been addressed properly, would have made the movie a lot better, but, you know, maybe too close to a documentary.
Exactly. And it's like, it's the thing of, you know, maybe these things are unaddressable because he himself is so unknowable and the answer to these questions, therefore, are so unknowable. But then it's, why are we making the movie? You know? Well,
I think a better question is, like, is it even an appropriate treatment of Dick Cheney and who he is and the questions we're asking to even try to do this cutesy, let's make, this is the whole point, I think. This is not someone who can be the protagonist of a dramatic film. At the end of the
day, his whole life was built against being that.
Exactly.
He certainly had the intellect for it, but I mean, look at everything he did, with maybe the exception of being a CEO, is always in a supporting role.
It's never dramatic. It's calculated towards an objective.
And
I guess, you know, shout out to McKay, because I guess hard to make that exciting for people and, you know, approachable and stuff. But from my perspective, Cheney is he's a fundamentally dry person. There's not,
And unless you could find some sort of, and I think they did in terms of performance. I think Bale was excellent in the role. And you find some, if this was a fictional character, it's a great encapsulation of it. But when you know these other things, and there's this kind of conflicting view of this person, because the movie's thesis is basically, he wanted a lot of power, he's kind of a bad guy, and he's manipulated a little bit by his wife, but boy was he smart, and that's it. and I don't know if that's certainly not the whole story. I don't even know if that's 10% of the story, but as a movie, there's parts that really work. It's certainly a piece of entertainment, but there's something about when you watch Big Short, which is equally something probably as dry to some people, McKay was able to make that not only pop, in terms of theatrical entertainment, a movie that's really fun to watch, has some great performances, it's great script, it's funny, it's interesting, and it's about the freaking mortgage crisis. And by the way, it's exceptionally explanatory. But it just works on every level. This doesn't succeed in that portion because maybe this isn't as explainable. At the end of the day, as dry as the mortgage crisis may be, it's numbers. You know, there's an actual math to it. And there's an actual arc to it. You can tell that story logically. Cheney kind of just defies that in that so much of it is internal and there's not metrics on a lot of who he is and what he is and what he represents that it's sort of impossible to do. And again, you want to say, oh, well, that's not McKay's fault. But then you go, well, why does this exist? Why does this piece of art exist then? If you can't do it, then why didn't you just make a movie about, you know, I don't know. There's got to be, you know, McKay's a brilliant guy. There's got to be something that could have maybe even still been political and still made the same stance that he wants to make as a, you know, classic Hollywood liberal, just like you, you know, with your wearing your Allbirds, feet up on your hemp desk. There are things he could have done with more of that, but this just doesn't seem as like it's a total hit, and it stinks because it wastes a lot of greatness in this film. There are some really great parts to it.
Well, one thing I will say is any excuse for Christian Bale to gain and lose 80 pounds, that's a movie worth making.
I know. Well, you know, when he makes when he transitions between Shaven and David, and when he figures out how to order the cookie tote in your life story, that's going to be one.
Is this where McDonald's wanted us to put the ad?
Do you have the ad ready for the cookie tote? For those of you,
I've got the ad ready.
All right, great. Let's hear it. Let's hear that tote.
No, we'll tee it up.
So, David is legendary. for. So David and I see each other. David lives, like we mentioned, in Los Angeles. I live here in Dallas, Texas, and we visit each other. He visits me more than I visit him, but he travels for work more than I do. But we see each other a lot, and David is his classic move is to sneak away for a minute. And for those of you who don't know, on Uber Eats, McDonald's will deliver you a what's called a cookie tote, which is a literally basically a Happy Meal box, kind of tote bag, full of 13 fresh baked chocolate chip cookies, and it's like $3.99. They deliver it, and David likes to make these appear at the most random times throughout an evening. The best
First
one ever.
All, it's hilarious.
It is. It's your best
Second
bit.
Second of all, you're not gonna lose any friends when 13 freshly baked, doughy, soft McDonald's cookies arrive. That's
absolutely true.
That's how to win a room over.
And just so you know, you cannot go to McDonald's and order this. I believe it's an Uber Eats exclusive item. But I remember we were in Santa Monica. I had no idea where we were. I had landed that day. And we went to an establishment for beverages. And we had a few beverages. And we had Ubered there because we had been somewhere else. And you ordered an – you told me it was like 1 a.m. You said, I'm going to get an Uber home. And I said, great. And we stood outside the place, and the Uber pulled up, and I started to get in the car, and the guy goes, no, no. And he just hands me a bag full of McDonald's, and I open it up, and there was a cookie tote inside, and then you told me that we were 3 blocks from your house, and we just had to eat this. That's the greatest toting of all time. That's the legendary toter.
Well, they're great. They're great endurance food, and they're portable. And those were the two things here in the script that McDonald's wanted us to highlight. So
head over to Uber Eats / ma'am. And, you know, for the normally the cost of $3.99 for a cookie tote, you can get a cookie tote for $3.99 using our promo code. Anyway.
Do the math, folks. It's 13 cookies for $3.99.
Delivered, by the way. That's the best part.
I actually don't think you can beat it on slice and bake. I've tried. I've done the math. It's complicated.
Yeah.
I don't think it's possible.
Well, what people don't factor in is the electric bill, you know, or God forbid you have a gas stove, you know, then you're looking at $14 to cook those cookies. It's better just to hit the button on Uber Eats. You could be at a park. Let's just say you're with your lady and you've got a picnic set up, maybe a little wine, a little iced tea, you know, you've got some little crackers and cheese and you're like, I could use a little sweet tea or a little sweet flavor right now. Two buttons on your phone, cookie tote arrives at the park. I mean, what's better than that? And that's definitely going to get you a second date. So that's free advice from us here at Mad About Movies. But back to the film. So you were talking about the more interesting one, I think, because I think there's more evidence on this person. So we're talking about that kind of reality distortion field. And I hate that term because it's so overused with Steve Jobs and all that is, but Cheney is the ultimate creator of that. Go ahead,
Rich. Before, so I know where you're going. I love it. Before you get there, just closing out our last thought, kind of on the, you know, the potential laziness of the film. To me, the worst offense the film committed, which I think so many films about this administration do, is that somehow George Bush was not complicit in creating the powerful position that Cheney had in his administration, that he was hoodwinked, that he's this idiot. I just nothing drives me more crazy. And I'm not necessarily a Bush fan. It's such an overplayed kind of lazy narrative in my mind. I honestly think George Bush knew exactly what he wanted. Yeah. He wanted a COO of the government. He wanted to, you know, pick 2-3 projects that were really passion projects for him. He wanted to be the face of the nation. But this is a guy with an MBA. He doesn't want to be 18 floors underground with John Yoo writing a, you know, legal opinion about, I mean, right. We're laughing, but no, I just think it's such an easy narrative to fall into, and I get it, you know, I don't like the Manchurian candidate. And it's just, It's easy.
It's
a
southern
use
thing. He's got a twang, so he's got to be dumb,
right,
or something.
Oh, he must be dumb, right? You know, I'm not saying W's the sharpest tool in the shed, but I think he knew exactly what he wanted. He knew that he needed experience during this campaign, and to think that Cheney somehow just, like, you know, got a fast one on him, and started controlling 95% of the government. That's absurd to me.
Yeah.
You know, do I think that Cheney knew once in the administration, do I think that he is a good politician and knows how to control the narrative to get what he wants done? Of course. I guarantee you that happened in the Obama administration. It happened mm-hmm. in the Clinton administration. I mean, the president is deluged with so much information. The person who can control the most obviously wins. It's not rocket science, but I just thought, you know, that was disappointing to me.
It was. And that performance, I think Rockwell's really bad. His W was, look, they don't have to, you don't have to do a spot on impersonation, but man, that made Josh Brolin look dead on him. Didn't you think that? I mean, he's like so little. I just didn't think any of it worked for me. That interpretation of George W. Bush. And no, that's also interesting because that whole Manchurian candidate thing it's been done a million times. It's lazy. It's boring. But yeah, it's not unlike a million things. It's, and by the way, not even necessarily the wrong decision as someone with an MBA background to say, I need an operator in this role. It's not even like a dirty secret. That's a really normal thing to decide, as you mentioned.
Well, it's like I've never worked in Washington. I've only run a state.
Yeah.
You know, maybe I should hire a process experienced conservative.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Anywhere.
The other piece of that is the Rumsfeld part. So that's a more interesting character and probably a more interesting protagonist of a film, because you have Carell, who's a great actor as Rumsfeld, but Rumsfeld's a really interesting person because he has that true facade of this kind of, oh gosh, golly, oh shucks guy. But as Carell has mentioned on the press tour for this movie, all you need to know about Rumsfeld is, you know, Richard Nixon and Henry Kissinger were like, that's the guy you need to look out for, because that guy can get what he wants and he'll stop at nothing to get there. That's maybe more of an interesting, I would almost be more interested in a Donald Rumsfeld movie with Cheney as a side character than this.
Well, I mean, I believe there's already been
a movie made about Donald Rumsfeld called The Dark Knight.
also featuring Christian Bale.
Oh,
in case you didn't know.
Right. I didn't know. I've never heard of that film, and certainly have not sent you the Here We Go gif every time one of us lands in each other's city.
I feel dirty and guilty for falling.
That was just such a cop out joke. I just
it was easy to make.
Yeah, you know, I could have done.
I could have really chosen any Batman movie and made Rumsfeld the antagonist and. You know, probably gotten between 3 and 6 chuckles from your audience, but I apologize. I just want to come clean. I was lazy and I'm sorry.
You know what? We don't accept your apology and you will be, I'm going to send you all the crappy emails that we get that are not about R. Kelly. We'll send you the non R. Kelly related emails. So last piece here, there's this piece that Cheney creates, like we talked about with the legal papers, this distortion field that he creates, this through kind of sheer act of will, and you see this over and over again, and you see it all the way back through freaking Epic of Gilgamesh through history, of this hubris getting in the way of and kind of overreaching, and you know, bending everyone else to their will, and you see it in the political world with Cheney kind of overreaching with the Iraq war, kind of coming back, at least tarnishing his legacy in a lot of ways. And you see it in the business world where people, you know, see it all the time in the business world where people overreach and kind of back themselves into this corner where they didn't have to be there in the first place. Do you think that's something that's just destined to go throughout history, or you think that's unique to Cheney? What do you think his, if he has a fatal flaw, what is that fatal flaw? Is it that hubris, or is it just that drive of will is just so overpowering that even he can't stop it?
No. So I'll break that down into a phenomenal question, first of all. And this is so core to the movie, I think. And to Cheney, I mean, I think you can break it down into a couple pieces. First, and we've sort of alluded to this, but you know, when you think about the Iraq war, I feel like And this is what makes me think Cheney is really a true believer in kind of the neocon thing versus the evil guy who was trying to get, you know, paid on the backside by Halliburton. It's just, you know, this is a guy who, despite taking so much time to consume so many facts about things going on in the U.S., you know, number one, created this weird paranoia about another terrorist attack happening, which, again, if you read Angler, you know, there's 5-6 other accounts of just these absolutely absurd fire drills that the government's forced to go through because of completely unsubstantiated threats. And you learn more about, you know, how Iraq was connected to Al-Qaeda. And I think anyone with, you know, really an kind of elementary understanding of maybe the last 50, 60, 70 years of kind of Middle East history, not even policy, just history, you know, kind of an understanding of how the different parts of the Middle East have interacted, would know kind of off the face of it that Al-Qaeda and Saddam Hussein were probably not working together, even if there was some completely unsubstantiated evidence. And so part one of your question, you know, what do I think his fatal flaw is? I think how do you separate your kind of creation of what this fact pattern means versus what the fact pattern actually means? And, you know, how do you separate your... He's someone who has an unbelievably strong view of how the world should be. And clearly he thought the world should be one way, and he found the facts to support him, to support his viewpoint. And he did so, I think, at the peril of any sort of logic. And, you know, you can argue I wasn't there, whatever, it's hysteria, fine, guilty. But if you look back at it, hindsight being 2020, he tied together a lot of facts that didn't make a lot of sense. I think the second part of your question is, now, what kind of weird and fraudulent manipulations do you start to commit to get people to believe your irrational view of the world? And, you know, you see this in Bad Blood, too, which is a book on our bro, you know, White Bros reading.
We should
pump that up, I guess. But you see it anywhere where there's a view of the world that's irrational. And, you know, and you're making Steve Jobs, again, I know it's so cliche, had a lot of irrational views, but backed it up with execution. I think the common theme between Bad Blood and Cheney is there are no facts that back up this view of the world. And so to get people to buy into it, they either have to leverage them by threatening them, which Cheney did many, many times, or they have to create false validation, which Cheney also did by writing these absurd legal opinions and, you know, lining up people and said, well, you believe it, so why don't you believe it? And I think, you know, Cheney's fatal flaw maybe is just getting so wrapped up in the execution of that vision and, you know, being unable to step back and see what was really going on. I'm not saying I don't think he's a dumb guy. I don't think... I guess I'm painting him to be this kind of naive character. I don't think that's the case at all. I just think this is a guy whose greatest paranoias were validated by something that happened one time. And that, I think, in his mind, gave him license to do all these other things that now looking back really made... They weren't logical and they didn't make any sense. But he's so effective at getting it done that he did.
Yeah, I think a lot of us can relate to that in our work life, our personal life, where you have this true belief, and whether that comes from quote unquote your gut or your some set of principles or whatever, and then you're kind of in too deep, and you can choose to do one thing: the humility of, oh my gosh, I was wrong. I was right on these 99 things, but I was wrong on this one. Let's back up and get out of here. Or you go, no, I was right on these 100 things. Darn it, and I'm going to work triple as hard and just flood you with paper until you believe that I'm right as well. And then, you know, that's all kind of humorous until lives are at stake and the world's at stake. And then sadly, you know, Cheney, who's someone who's brilliant in a lot of ways, legacy is undoubtedly tarnished. And I think as history goes on, because, you know, the buck stops here, pun intended, politically, but, you know, George W. Bush gets a pass on some things because people just assign all the, yeah, people. Because
he had Bain working for him. And I just think that's absurd.
If you don't think that.
Right.
That GW is right there, believing all those things, approving all those opinions, and equally complicit.
Right.
With any decision made in that administration, I think you're absurd. And, you know, now GW can get on Kimmel and show his paintings of wounded veterans, and it's kind of like, wow, well, that's, I mean,
yeah,
that's pretty bleak. I don't know. It's
a little bit dark.
It is. It is in a lot of ways, and it's a lot of that's Cheney's own doing and George W. Bush's own doing, and back to the film, really oversimplistic, dumb liberal media as well is doing as well, because that's the picture they paint here. This movie doesn't take any risk. It's just like a very, it's cynical in some of the right places. It's smart in some of the right places, but it's also really lazy in all the wrong places. And that's a disappointment to me. And it's smug in its laziness. So just as a film, taking away the historical relevancy, it's not fun to watch because in a lot of places, because it's so smug in some decisions it makes, and then so lazy in other ones as well. So that's a bummer for me, because it was really high on my list of things I was excited for, not just because of the subject matter, but I think Adam McKay is one of the most interesting filmmakers going right now. Obviously, I love Big Short, but I love his comedies as well. The reason we bring up Bad Blood, which David mentioned a minute ago, that apparently is his next movie, which is about Elizabeth Holmes and Theranos. And maybe, like I was saying, because there's more known quantity with that story, this is maybe something he can add his little flair to and make more interesting. But something as ambiguous as Cheney, and look, how you feel about him politically may not be ambiguous, but his motivation will always be, because he's so guarded.
It's funny. I think for someone who's just so polarized, I mean, I have a visceral reaction when you hear that name, and mm-hmm. It's just,
yeah.
It's funny because the reaction to him is still one or zero, and yet the person itself is a pretty complicated mm-hmm. thing. I think what you're getting at is, I wouldn't argue the same thing at all with that Blood story.
Yeah. No, I think. Well, I mean, just for the love scenes alone, I think you're excited for those with Bad Blood, right?
Of course. one really important theatrical, device that I think we've glossed over here is I don't even know if this is intentional, but, you know, any good kind of biographical movie about W starts with him drunk driving and, you know, ending up the way he was. And it's kind of interesting. Cheney starts as this roughneck mm-hmm. the same way. I don't know if this was intentional, but it's like, here's a guy who started out the same way W did, basically being a disgrace to his family, and through the complete opposite path ends up in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was,
yeah,
I don't know if that was intentional, but thought it was interesting.
No, that's actually, I had not thought about that. That's a really, really interesting point. That has to be intentional too, but yeah, two simultaneous paths in other directions, one through, and I don't mean this negatively, because I think politics on a certain level is of course this. I don't mean to make George W. any lesser than other politicians, but W. really did it through kind of a showmanship, you know, buying a baseball team, making myself a public relations rise to the top. And that's not any less. It's just, that's how, you know, think of someone on the opposite end of the spectrum. Barack Obama was in a lot of ways a public relations creation in his rise to the top as well. So
by all accounts, someone who just compared to W way more excited to dig into the meat of things. And
yes.
I think it's a good lesson. The lesson I take away from this is, and I'm not always good at this, is just, you can't, it's so easy to get by today with not having to appreciate the nuance. And
mm-hmm. Wikipedia culture, man. And that the movie ironically disproves its thesis, right? Because it's,
speaking of theatrical rises though, can we just talk about
Tall?
What was going, Tall is, and
I'd love to hear Tall's opinion about this, but if we could get just the Richard Barton assessment of maybe the weirdest bedroom scene I've ever seen in my life.
Well,
can we just talk about that? I mean, what was good? Was that?
Yeah.
How did we go from Halliburton CEO to weird Shakespearean poetry to just something that made me so uncomfortable? And I won't spoil it for the people who haven't seen the movie out there, but I mean, I was.
No, we're in spoilers.
I was sitting in the movie theater by myself watching this movie.
With one old lady in Minneapolis. Set the stage, man. Paint a picture.
I badly wanted to leave. I was extremely uncomfortable in that situation.
Well, that goes deep. You and I can go deep on genetic and cultural things that make us always uncomfortable in those sort of moments. But even in our own bedrooms. But
I've tried to repress that scene. I tried. It didn't work.
It didn't. Wow. New level for you. Something you couldn't repress, man. And they said it couldn't be done. No, but that's I think that's McKay just taking swings and doing stuff. But boy, man, that was something I don't think you can unsee. And everyone, I didn't expect it because everyone was like, What do you think Chaney would think of this? And the move was like, I don't think Lynn would like it very much, but I think Dick wouldn't be bothered by it. And then you see that scene, you're like, nah, I think he super would be.
And then just the final point here on the makeup, I mean.
Oh, yeah.
Unbelievable. Christian Bale, down to the gold watch and the weird, veiny hands. I just, unbelievable execution.
Yeah. And that combination of the real life weight gain and face changing and stuff that Bale does, as we've seen him do a million times now, is sort of his calling card, which stinks because I would hate for him to be he's good, man. And I hate that he's kind of in this gimmick of persons like, oh, he was the machinist and then he was Batman and then he was the fighter. And, there's someone that just goes up and down. With their weight, because Vincent D'Onofrio went through that a lot in the 80s and 90s, and they're both such good actors. Bale even also being a movie star to me too. I hate that he's gimmicky in that, but the combination of his dedication to this, and I think the one other point I wanted to make in Bale's credit, I'm glad Bale is getting, for any awards that this wins, I think Bale will get the majority of them, and I think what's great about his performance is. The movie takes this really cynical angle at Chaney. Understandably, it comes from an opposing political view. And then even if you're on Chaney's side of the aisle, he's a hard person to reconcile with just because he's so gruff. And I think the movie takes a really tough angle at him. But I think Bale didn't. I think Bale really played him like he was playing, a hero. And that movie, that performance is really open. And I think he really put, I'm sure as an actor that lives in Santa Monica, I'm sure his personal politics are not necessarily in line with Dick Cheney's, but I think he really treated that character with a lot of love and really brought it. And I'm glad he's getting recognized for it, even if the movie is so-so.
Yeah. I mean, I think he was true to the fact that no matter what you say, Cheney, I think he did think he was saving the world.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't, but I thought he was.
Yeah.
And then, can we just talk about the time where the guy falls off the telephone pole and his leg is 90 degrees?
Yeah.
To his torso, and everyone just walks away. Is that like a thing that people did in the '60s that I missed, or was that just he broke his leg, so he's dead? Is that
LSD, man?
Good point. Strong counterpoint. I had not considered that.
Yeah. No, that was. There was some weird, like you said, that Boston Globe is so dead on. I hadn't read that till you said that. That Wikipedia mixed with just, that will be a gift that will, that was kind of weird, trying to knock you out of your seat moments in this are weird. Some real home run swings. But let's go ahead and grade this out and we'll get to a weekly recommend. I'll go first. There's a lot here. It's a hard movie to wrangle. It's certainly a very high degree of difficulty, if not an impossible degree of difficulty. And all things considered, there was a lot of parts I did enjoy. but a lot of parts I really rolled my eyes at. And it's, I had the same issue with the post last year where it's like, maybe I'm in too deep and I have unreasonable expectations, but I think I'm reasonable here. I'm going to give this a B minus. What about you?
Now you've kind of taken my rating from me. So everyone's just going to say, well, if he says B minus, you've just been,
why do you think I went first? Tote boy.
This guy talks about how lazy the writers of the movie are, and he gets on, and he just copies the same grade as the first guy.
Yeah, super mono of you, dude. Super mono.
What's wrong with this guy? I don't know. But, I mean, you know, for me, I think it's a B minus. Yeah. Maybe we're a little bit biased, having read, you know, read Angler beforehand, because I think that book just does so much better job capturing Cheney. But, for me, it's a B minus. It's entertaining, but... Yeah. Certainly not gonna approach, the kind of realm of the Dark Knight for me, if you will.
And that's the thing too about someone like Chaney is he's so, as you mentioned to start this conversation off, he's so deep in the woods and so deep in things. The only way to really study him and understand him is in a book where you can spend 15 or a 15-hour documentary or something, because then the fascination of Chaney is in those really granular details, and you're never going to get there in a 2-hour movie. And that's not the fault of the director or the filmmakers or the actors or everyone involved for making it. But then the question is, then why make it? That your initial, that it's the same as Chaney. Hey, all of your execution is based on this flawed premise in a lot of ways. Maybe this film was as well. And that's disappointing, but everyone involved, I think, they're going to let Adam McKay make more movies and he'll probably make some more good ones. I think Christian Bale, believe it or not, they're going to let him make a couple more movies, and no one is worse for wear. And gosh, this is winning Golden Globes and may even sneak an Oscar or two out in a really weak year. So it's not going to kill anyone's career, but it's disappointing, because when you hear Adam McKay and Christian Bale and Amy Adams and Steve Carell and this whole group, you expect a little more, but. K. Sarah, right?
Exactly.
Man, you're running out of steam fast. You need to, hey, will you quickly order another cookie tote? Maybe get a second wind. All right,
I don't know how you do this every week. I'm exhausted.
It's draining. Imagine having to deal with Kent and Brian. That's where it really draws it out of you. Yeah, it really draws it out of you.
Once you and I get to meet in person for the first time, hopefully you'll feel comfortable introducing both of them to me.
Neither of those things are ever going to happen, and you bet both of them at my wedding, so I'm glad you remember that. Okay, real quick, we are going to take a quick break, and then David and I are going to come back with a weekly recommend.
Weekly recommends.
All right, we are back in the bunker, the bunker underneath the White House. We are writing all kinds of crazy legal documents that they're going to transfer full ownership of this podcast over to me and David. David, you got a weekly recommend for us?
Weekly recommend. I'm going to go with the Lynn Cheney Book Club.
That is excellent. And explain what that is. That's a new service.
A new direct-to-consumer software as a service.
Very disruptive.
Super disruptive.
And it's just sending you one Lynn Cheney book every month. When you've gone through the whole kind of library, it just sends you the first one again. Because you probably didn't read it long.
You can give it to a friend. And quickly.
You can give it to a friend. They're great for the fireplace. And this is when you use the exclusive book code, MAM. This is lynn.cheney.book.clue.com/ MAM. And this is $9.99 a month.
And nice. It's a four year minimum commitment.
Well, you pay up front and you pay, yeah. Strong.
It is up front and only currently in the three.
Well, makes sense. That's the new way. Real quickly, we didn't get to it in the review. You have to talk about, there's a Lynn Cheney book that she wrote that's like a thriller about the a president, and it's an exact House of Cards stole an entire plot line from her. So you need to give us the 30-second version of that.
It's a total outrage, and I honestly, I can't even believe it, but for those people who, used to watch House of Cards, Crafter number season one, season two, Frank Underwood unseats the president by convincing him to take a psychoactive drug, or an antidepressant or anti-anxiety drug, which then, of course, he leaks to the public and, you know, the rest is, I guess, fake history. Little known fact, for those of you who've read Angler out there, Lynn Cheney's political drama featuring none other than her husband under a different name, of course, actually was the first one to have the storyline. So, little known fact, just thought I'd make that part of the public record here.
There you go. Just great recognition by you. But you,
a lot of research for this pod, you know?
A lot of research. And we should say, speaking of House of Cards, you're a big Free Spacey guy, right? You don't.
I feel like this is important to say for the record. I'm definitely not.
No, dude, you are always texting me like he was framed. This is BS and stuff. You're always sending that to me.
All right. Well, I appreciate that.
I'm so happy right now. All right. For me, I've got, you know, I'm trying to think of something that's a little more topical on this. My weekly recommend. Normally Kent stalls for me here and then I can do it. I'm trying to think of a good book on this because I've recommended this before. You know what? I'm going to go. If you want
to make sure you can afford the Lynch Cheney book club.
I know I am. Well, this Ethereum, I'm trying to transfer all my money over to Ethereum in Robinhood. You know what? The aforementioned Angler, which is a book, if you're interested in Cheney, is definitely interesting. And there's another book of a similar type person, a really, really master operator who's flawed and interesting. And I think more understandable because his paranoia was more on the surface. And I think someone it's endlessly fascinating. And that's Richard Nixon. And there's a book called Being Nixon by the historian Evan Thomas that I'm always trying to get David to read. So that's my recommend. And I'll, if you're interested in this kind of thing and you've sat through an hour of this, then by God, maybe Being Nixon is for you. It's a really, really great history and is very sympathetic in a lot of ways to Nixon. It's not some biased, person on, attack on Nixon, much like Angler is a really well-researched sort of chronological history of the Cheney vice presidency. So, David, it was such a joy to speak with you. I don't hear from you enough. We only talk every 7.5 minutes, and it's been nice actually getting to have this conversation recorded for posterity. And quite frankly, our language was way better with the microphones on. So I'm proud of us.
Well, I'm just glad you got through the whole pod with that bit about us talking all the time. Very impressive.
I know. What a joke. I'll see you at Thanksgiving.
Hey, appreciate you having me on here. And, apologies for the dip in rating.
Hey, dude, we're going to get that West Coast bump. And last question, you fired up from Kingsbury and Phoenix. Are we going to go to a game?
I'm not feeling it. I was so excited to have him here in Los Angeles. I bought a fresh pair of Ray-Bans. I was ready to consider entering the Coliseum. I don't know. I'm neutral. I think it was a boring hire, but that's how I feel.
Wow. Thought you were cool, man. Thought you were cool.
Ending on a down. Sorry.
Well, you can catch us next week. We'll be back in it. This is the last movie, I think, of 2018. We have to cover of the big ones, and then we'll catch up on some stuff too. But we're going to start 2019 right next week with Kent and Brian back in the fold. For Kent's sake, I don't know. Do we want to root for the Cowboys or do we want to root against them to get him back on this on the podcast? But go Cowboys, go Kent, and Brian, whatever he's doing, who cares, right? David, thank you for coming on. The pleasure was ours. Come back again sometime, Maybe we'll have a better microphone next time. We'll be able to connect. It'll be way better. All right, love you, buddy. Have a good one.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Tossed salad and scrambled eggs. And maybe I seem a bit confused. Yeah, maybe, but I got you pegged. But I don't know what to do with those tossed salads and scrambled eggs. They're calling again. Scrambled eggs all over my face. They're making me yah-yah. Tossed salads and scrambled eggs.